welcome to our podcast,
Band BFFs,
the podcast where we make your music selection less complicated.
On today's episode, we're going to be talking about Mighty Might March by Ted Messang, arranged by Sean O'Loughlin. Cheers to starting the conversation.
Okay, this is a great traditional style march. It's in the key of concert B flat or G minor. Of course, we add a flat at the trio. It is, Katie and I were just discussing, I don't think a march for the faint of heart.
No.
Pretty traditional scoring instrumentation, double clarinet parts, double trumpet parts, traditional percussion, so snare, bass, crash. Triangle at the trio, timpani, mallets, but you could get away with doing this with three or four percussionists easy.
Yep.
If you needed to.
We were also noting that it was written in 1951. So obviously it's been arranged, I guess, since then, but it's just been around a long time. So yes, it's very traditional. And by that, we mean really high trumpet one, really high trombone, really high flute parts.
Yep.
So unless you necessarily have the right group that is able to play really high first clarinet, if they're not able to play with their best sounds up high, this may not be the march for you. But it could absolutely showcase a really great low brass section.
Mm-hmm.
And a trumpet section. You got to have pretty decent first trumpet for this piece.
Yeah, I agree. And upper woodwinds with some technicality.
Yes.
The technique in the woodwinds, I don't feel like is quite as demanding as some of the range stuff in the brass, but
yep.
Still
there.
But still, yeah.
So as Laura mentioned, also it's written in cut time. So you would want to approach teaching this piece though by teaching it in 4-4 and then just gradually bumping the tempo up until you got to the final tempo, which is marked at 120 in cut time. So, you know, I've played this before. Laura has too, or one of our bands. And that's how we approached it. We started very slow to work on the technique to make sure we've got pitches. We've got the style in there before we would just like click it up a little bit each week.
And I am in favor when you're doing something like that. Like, I think it's okay to teach the kids. We count before we play anything in my band hall. And I think it's okay to count in 4-4. But once you make that shift to cut time, it's important to make sure that they understand how to count it in cut time as well. That skill is really important. It's not the same as counting it in a fast 4.
Right. And I will usually, if we're going to do cut time, still put the metronome where the kids are tapping in cut time. So it might be click, 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 and this would be down, up, down, up, but it's still clicking like 1, 2, 3, 4, but they're still tapping in cut time. So that way when it goes faster and faster, yes. And then again, they're learning, you know, how to put an accent on beat two, big beat two and that sort of thing. Yeah. So the very beginning starts off with everybody having a similar rhythm. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1. That's what all the brass have. Trumpet and flute and high clarinet have 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1.
And they have to tongue on one, which I think that
1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2.
Yes,
yep.
So that's
it
really
is tricky
important for clarity.
Yeah, when you're up in the tempo-wise, that is very tricky. And then the trumpets are mimicking what the high woodwinds are doing, too, and landing on a high E. So, again, we mentioned you got to have a pretty decent trumpet section. Then the lows take over the melody going into measure 5, and they are going to play everything very tongued firm.
Very firm.
Yes. In measure 8, they have a figure that they have over and over, which is 1 and 2, a 1 in cut time. And so I was taught by my mentors at the time to put a slash between the dotted quarter and the eighth note. So that way it sounds like a dotted 8/16 with a little lift to it, and to tongue the eighth note really firm.
Really firm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then I think one of the things in this whole section, when you're trying to balance, there are a ton of instruments on the counter melody here, not nearly as many on the melody. So that balance can be really tricky, making sure that you do balance to the low voices at least the first time through on this first strain. And then the whole notes that they land on are not always in the friendliest of positions. No. So the tuning is really critical here.
Not just even the tuning, but also just the follow through, you know? Like, like it's long notes. Ba, da, 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 da. And they want to go da, 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 da. Da, 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 da. And they want to like die away on all the long notes instead of pushing through. So that makes it difficult. Yeah. So the first two long notes in the trombone are G and A natural. So yes, I agree with that. It goes to a C in measure 15, which are all just the fun positions. So again, I probably would not pick this piece for my group unless I knew I had a really stellar trombone euphonium section, because this comes back over and over and over. As Laura mentioned, the counter melody part is very highly scored in this piece. And what I would probably do is the first time around, have it be maybe one on a part in that section. And then the second time around, let everybody play and just tell the lows to kind of beef up their volume a little bit more. The tuba is not on the melody either. They're on like a little pseudo bass line.
The motor. Yeah, the motor part.
Sometimes they come in and kind of help out, but a lot of the time they're not matching. So it's really, truly just trombone, euphonium, and tenor sax on the and bassoon, on the melody the whole time. So in the counter melody part at measure five, the flute, oboe, clarinet, sax, trumpet, horn, so many people, they're all playing and a two and a one and two, and you have to make sure all that that half note goes the way to the rest. And a two and a one off. And you want to make sure you teach that like super duper duper from the very beginning. Do not let the long notes die away. Use vibrato. Make sure they push through.
And that's exactly what I was about to say, is vibrato instruments can really help by making sure that they're using vibrato and intensifying that. And that'll kind of even give the energy
with the energy it
forward.
Needs. Yeah. Between 10 and 11, there is no place for the kids to take a breath. So they need to put an arrow, a no breath, and push through all the way to 12 where they can take a breath again. The trumpet part, as we mentioned, is up high. It's landing on upper D's and upper E's, often upper F's. So the tuning between all these sections can be very tricky if you don't think about it early enough on.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And when you're going slow, it's just, it's harder for them to like keep their little faces set and everything for that long of a period of time, but it, as it goes faster, it kind of clicks in.
Yeah, there is just a lot of the cross tuning where the flute and oboe and first clarinet are sitting and aligning that
in a
horrible range for first trumpet. Yeah. So that, you know, like we said, not for the faint of heart.
For sure. So this same idea keeps going forever and ever. Percussion is very traditional. The bells part is mimicking what the low brass are playing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, take it or leave it. And then on this, it's a traditional go back to the first part and then have a second ending. As I mentioned, I would probably have less people the first time and everybody come in the second time.
And I mean, that's one of the fun things about marches, I think, is there's a million different ways that you can color them. Find something that is going to showcase your band and make it sound really special. I'm always a fan of you know, highlighting the melody the first time and then bringing out the counter melody.
But you know what? It took me a long time in my career to like be comfortable with that. You know, I was always like, in my young years, I was like, I have to play what it says on the page. And then it was like, no, I don't, because they don't know, you know. And that was kind of born out of my band just like didn't have what it needed for me to play that march or whatever. Now I pick my literature according to my band, which is what I should have done when I was younger. But yeah, don't be afraid
like
to change
freedom.
It.
There's more freedom in a march to experiment like that.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so after we get to the second ending at 21, now we're at 22, the timpani has to shift pitches. So that's just a little side note, because that's something different for timpani. At 22, we've got the same people on the low brass, but now the trumpets are playing this new part. I guess that would be the melody, the trumpet and sax.
Yes, I would consider
that.
Yeah,
trumpet, sax, clarinet, two, and oboe are now on the melody, and the low brass are on a little bit of a counter melody.
So this is the second strain now, right?
Right. And the trumpets, again, are going way up there. They're sitting at the top of the staff the whole time, the first trumpet, and then the clarinet, two, is kind of doing a little bit of a harmony part along with, like, trumpet, two. So your first trumpets kind of have to lead the way here.
And they're double with there. They are, let me see, make sure I'm reading. Yeah, they are.
Just doubled by oboe.
Oboe, that's it. On the same pitches and mallets, yeah.
So that's something to think about, yeah. There's like a little obligato-esque type thing from the flute and the first clarinet. They're trilling up above the staff, and then and a two-e and a one, and two, and one, two. And they kind of come in with a little bit of the melody after their little obligato, and they do match what the first trumpets have every two measures. So they're just trilling, and then they match with the melody. The lows, again, are playing kind of the background here, but they're up so high. So the trombone part is up on C's and D's over and over and over. So it's just important, again, to make sure that that's like really in tune. They're not landing on a chordal point and being flat. Gosh, that's so important. Bassoon is up on D's a lot too. So the good thing is the horn part is pretty fairly easy most of the time. Yeah. So if you have kind of a pretty okay horn section,
there's like a little articulation thing coming out that's not super easy.
Yeah,
on
no,
horn,
I know.
But,
yeah. But for the most part, this part is definitely just challenging for upper trumpet and a little bit of the technique, like Laura mentioned, on like flute and clarinet.
And then just balancing, just making sure that you know what part, you know, you want to be most important, and making sure that those, the few woodwinds that you have, the flutes and the first clarinets that are on the little like what Katie was calling the obligato part, making sure that that's really, really clean. It's really not hard in their fingers.
No, it's just like a little scale.
It's just little scales, but just making sure that that's really clean. And I think that actually as thick as some of the other stuff is, that can get lost. There's a little part at the end too that comes back with just flute that's kind of the same thing. So just pay attention to balance. Make sure and it sounds like what you're hearing
it,
all the parts.
Teach it tongued at first so that way the kids won't rush it. Teach everything tongued. Then you can add in the articulation later. There's also, I forgot about this snare roll. It just kind of came back to me. That can tend to be a little bit overwhelming at like 30 and 31. They have like a roll underneath the trumpet melody. Maybe it was just my snare drummer that was loud. But you want to keep it contained and not like a loud buzz roll.
And it's doubled in the trill. Like I feel like it's meant to play off of that. And just like you don't want the trill covering everything up, you don't want the snare.
Absolutely. Then at the end on measure 37 at the first ending, we have ta 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 ta, and then we go back. And the second time around at 38, we're leading into the trio. The euphonium and sax and bassoon part has one and two and one, and
first
they kind of take over.
Too.
Yeah, and first clarinet and oboe. So that's the melody. It is a high E flat. In the euphonium, euphoniums do have the melody. So same with bassoon. Bassoon is scored on their high E flat. So it's
piano.
It's way up there in the range. So again, I would not program this piece unless you have some like rock solid euphoniums who are not going to crack. I know I've adjudicated this piece before. And pieces like it where the euphonium part is really important.
Yes.
And then they're getting up higher and higher and they're just cracking and cracking, or they're really out of tune and it just kind of takes away,
so
from the whole thing.
I think this is tough right here for a myriad of reasons. Not only for the range that it's in, that it's marked soft, and then they are doubling, the euphonium melody is doubling the clarinet, and we have the clarinet in octaves.
Yeah.
And then where the euphonium is doubling one of the octaves of clarinet, so it's like a whoa.
Yeah.
At least the notes are relatively stable for clarinet.
Right.
But man, yeah, that's a, and then the harmony part is coming in the trombone and oboe, and alto, all
and
of that.
Horn.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Whew. But yeah, it's just kind of like a little bit less traditional in the sense of how it's scored. So you just want to make sure you're featuring the right people. If you've got some really amazing euphonium and bassoon kids, then this is the trio for you. Also, you could
don't be afraid to thin this out.
That's
too,
what I was just about to say. You could choose to say, I don't have any good euphoniums, so I'm going to let my bassoon be the featured instrument.
Yeah.
Or my euphoniums are amazing, I'm going to make sure that they're all playing this and less of the woodwinds are playing or whatever it is. So, yeah, like Laura mentioned earlier, like don't be afraid to play around with scoring. And you could literally just have one on a part, and that sometimes sounds really awesome
if, on if a trio, it's the right, if it's that's the right, right one the right on a part. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this part keeps going. Also, follow through is so important. We've talked about that a little bit, but just making sure anytime they have long notes that they're all doing the same thing. So for instance, the melody here goes one, one, two, one, and two, and one. And so you would want to cross out the tied note in 42. So that everybody could lift and take a breath there. Mm-hmm. So marking that in your parts ahead of time is super important. That way we're all playing it the same way. Earlier, Laura and I, when we were talking about this, though, sometimes the melody tends to get a little bit snippy here. So they'll go, and two, and one, two, yep, dumb. It's marked as a staccato note, but you don't want it to be choked.
Accented.
Or accented. You want it to be a literal staccato note. Ta.
Exactly.
And we made the little hand gesture. But it's for real. You have to make sure that, because the whole band has that staccato note marked. You want to make sure it lines up. And then you come back in on an accent on beat two. Lift two. And really, the accent should just take care of itself because it's coming off of the lift.
I would write on that OTR. My kids know OTR means open throat release. Yep. So that's just a reminder to keep things AH in the back of your throat, when they release that note, so that it doesn't sound punchy and or accented, which I think both of those are the tendency. I also wanted to throw out there something with percussion in this section. Lots of people do this, but if you are, especially if you thin out the scoring and you've got one on a part or anything like that here, having the snare drummer play piano close to the edge on the head of the drum. If they've got great control and dexterity, that works really well. You can also have them play on the rim until you add some other people back in and the dynamic starts to increase a little bit.
I also love a little woodblock action sometimes.
I do too. Yeah, you can just absolutely.
You can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. That's the cool thing about a march. And, you know, we don't talk about that a lot, but this is, like we said, a very traditional march where you could do that for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and it would take away or would help thin it out even more. She's got a little triangle in the background, so that would be such a good idea. Okay, so the trio's continuing on. We're making sure that we're not dying away on long notes.
Trumpets are resting through all of this, by the way, which is actually really nice, right? Yeah. Because they've had a bit of a chop buster, at least the first trumpets have.
They're literally the only people resting other than flute and timpani. So then we're continuing through. We have the same, and tuba. And I did say that before. Whenever the last time I played this piece, I actually let my tubas play what the Barry sax had. I just liked it better. It sounded more full and less small with the euphonium as the lead part. Mm-hmm. It just helped. But, I mean, do whatever is best for your group. Okay, so we're continuing on, and then we end at measure 71. We're at the dogfight now, and everybody's in. We're back on crash cymbals instead of triangle. We would be back on the snare drum if we've done rim or woodblock. And we come out with a bang. The trumpets and the horns have to play one, two, and a one, and two, and one. And it's like you're either going to have to teach them how to single tongue really fast or double tongue. So it's definitely not, again, for the faint of heart. And the trumpets right out the gate.
Yeah. This is it. That's happening. Right. So there's no hiding behind muddy articulation.
And the trumpet part is C sharp, A, and then A, C sharp, E, A, D. And I remember whenever we played this, my first trumpets played E fourth instead of open.
Yeah.
Because then they could just
stay. Because it was the same position the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah. So just kind of think about that. That might be a good idea. The second trumpet is not as high. It does go up to a C sharp though. It's just jumping around a lot. The horns go up to a D, and then within two notes, they're down to the octave D lower. So
the thing that I think makes, I mean, obviously I think the articulation is way important on this.
Yeah.
And it's hard enough letting your trumpet players sound great when they're double tonguing.
Yeah.
And then you add a conical brass instrument with the bell facing away from you that is also playing with them. And that, man, that clarity of articulation is not easy. So if you only have one horn player that can do it really well, then only have one horn player do it, because this cannot be muddy articulation.
Nope.
Cannot be.
And it's got to be like a daily rep thing. Yes. Like every day they have to play these two measures for you, like no matter what. Also, I remember whenever we played this, one little trick that helped the kids' tongue quicker on 2E and a 1 was to just really not think about separating the notes at all, making sure that the airstream was just the same the whole time. And so even a small little crescendo helped with just their sound coming out. As you know, that just helps all articulation more, constant air. Then the band comes back in with a high C in trombone, one and a two and one and two. And so it's cute, but it starts up real high as the response. So your kids have to be really good at just like coming in off the cuff on a really high note. Tubas are on an upper C as well. So the articulation here is really important. Ta, 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 ta. And the last three notes are accented for the band. Then we do it again.
Ta, 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 ta. Which is like exactly the way Katie's saying it is what's going to happen.
Oh, did I slur that?
Uh-huh. Not ta, ta, ha, but ta,
ta, ta, ta, ta, ta, ta, ta.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe I missed it, but that is like, okay. Yeah.
No, I believe you. I probably did do it wrong. So make sure, yes, again, that all that articulation lines up. Then we do it again with trumpet and horn having the same thing. One, two, and a one, and two, and one. Da, 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 da. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's, woo, and then it's back and forth, obviously like a normal dogfight. And two, and one, a two. And the low people, 79 and 80 again with that little like
lift
hair,
on the dotted
hairline
quarter.
Of space between the dotted quarter and the eighth note.
And the low voices have this kind of repeatedly, this dotted quarter
they just
eight
go
or
up
dotted
and up
eight,
and up. Yep.
Yeah, so just make that consistent space every time.
Yep.
Ta, 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 ta.
Yes,
ta, ta,
consistent, ta. Consistently playing it the same way over and over and between all the instrument parts is what makes bands sound clean.
Consistency is the name of the game.
Yep, that's true. Then they go up and they kind of keep going at 84. Da 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 dun 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 dun. And then the whole band comes in. Da da da. Then the trumpets are in on a high F. So this is the last little strain of the melody. The trumpets have the lead. And yeah, like I said, on a high F. And I remember vividly my trumpets were so tired by this point. Mm-hmm. And so
trombones
like
trombones are on a high E
flat. Like tuning was just a little bit cray cray. So you want to make sure that, you know, the students are able to play all the way to the end with good energy and good
sounds
and good sounds.
And this is the area I was talking about where it's only the flutes now that
with
have
the obbligato.
And so that's it. The rest of the ensemble is marked fortissimo. And I mean, you've got the tuba berry bassoon bass clarinet playing your motor part. Otherwise, everyone is on this
it's
melody
like a harmony,
or harmony.
Yeah,
and the flutes are the only ones doing something different. And it's not written in a high range for flutes. It's
no.
in the staff.
Right.
It's
so
in the
it's going to be hard to hear them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like the clarinet part is up high, clarinet one. The horn part's now up to like D's over and over. Like she mentioned, trombone is up at high E flat. So the tuning of the chords is something to spend a lot of time on at the end when they're tired. And when they might not sound their best. So make sure you talk a lot about tuning tendencies. You can play and stop on a chord. We would do that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, one and two and hold and make sure that the chord sounded really good together.
One of the things that we would do, I've done this on a march several times when it has been like what we're discussing, when the tuning and tonality has been not great. Find a chunk of the march, take an 8-measure or 16 bar chunk of the march and treat it like a chorale. And we would play it as a chorale every day. And of course, the harmony sounded horrible when you first start, but when you slow it down and you force their ears to work and them to listen, they start to understand the harmonic structure and how everything is supposed to work. And then when you put it back in at performance speed and add the style, they still have that tonality in their ear. So I think you can use that, even though stylistically that's not what you would want for a march, harmonically it can really help.
And don't be afraid to rewrite chords. So if you don't have enough people on the root, then just change it up. If you have so many people on the third that it just sounds awful, just change it. It's okay. They're not going to know. They'll just go, wow, this sounds
that
so
sounds
nice.
Really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, most judges can't tell if you've changed a trumpet to pitch. So we keep doing this, the obbligato and the flutes.
Mm-hmm.
The clarinet comes in every once in a while and kind of helps out the flute, but not often. The trumpets literally lead the way to the end with clarinet one. We're up so high on those Fs. And it's just a traditional ending. We're going higher and higher. The trombones are staying above the staff the whole time. Same things as before, just making sure we're tonguing and keeping it the exact same all the way to the end. The last note, we always think the word tone to keep it a long stinger. So, yeah.
This is just under about 3 minutes in length. Yeah, so, I think it was
like 2:45 or something like that.
It can be an endurance challenge for your brass, especially. So just make sure you got the right band when you choose
But
this.
It's a great piece. So much fun. As we both mentioned, we've played it before. It's just a great challenge for any band who's ready to feature trumpet, low brass.
Yep.
It's a good one. So we hope you will program Mighty Might March in the future. And thank you for joining us on this episode of
Band BFFs.